I want to talk to you today specifically about the application of games to processing a preclear. This is specific, very, very specific. And I want to show you a few little elements concerning games that you might find very useful and very, very handy in processing some highly complicated preclear who refuses to be understood. Now, we know basically that a preclear is stupid. That's an odd thing to know, but we do know this. Right? He's stupid. And he's stupid because if he got that bright, he'd as-is all the game he had, you see. He figures. This is the wrong computation. As soon as he finds out he can have a better game, he can be less stupid. See? But one of the things he must be is stupid. In the first place, he has to not know what you're thinking in order to listen to you talk. You got that? Well, that's a nice piece of stupidity, but it makes communication. Otherwise, you'd pick it all up on a theta basis. See, you'd say, I have an odd idea. For instance, people I'm around try to fool me every once in a while and say something different than what they're thinking. And if they go too far along this line, I do something horrible to them. You see? I start answering what they're thinking, not what they're saying. And this is very disturbing to them. Now, of course, they will never let you prove to yourself that they were thinking that because they always deny it. And that's the state of mind. So it's not something you monkey with lightly. You either know to do it, or how to do it, or not. Now, actually, one thetan could put a postulate into the wall over there, and another thetan can communicate with the wall and get the postulate back off the wall again. That's very easy. That's a very basic communication, but it has one via on the line, doesn't it? Huh? All right, now let's just look at this further, and let's take you not knowing what the fellow is saying and actually listening with a body to this person, and then thinking with a brain over what he said, and then answering him, and we have a complication right there, which is pretty complicated. Well, now let's get further complicated, and let's have him also be listening with and talking with and not knowing with a body and a brain and its mechanisms. Now we've got two of these things going at the same time. We wonder why people have difficulty communicating. Well, they just put more and more vias on the line. Now, communication is a kind of a game all by itself, and your preclear enjoys having a few vias on the communication line, but when he isn't communicating so that he can get along in life at all or play a game, he just has too many vias on the line. You got that? Now, the old-time phrase for recall processing was straight wire. That was an instinctive phrase, you see. You had the individual remember straightly back to the original difficulty. You strung a communication line from the fellow in present time to the difficulty. And the straighter that communication was, the more likelihood that you would get an immediate blow-up of the difficulty. Follow that. All right. Therefore, a communication line is as positive as it is straight from cause to effect. And it is as unpositive as it has vias. So that in all communication systems, you, to a certain point, get increasing accuracy as you delete vias from the line. And then you are apt to, however, go up above a comprehensibility and get into an incomprehensibility by having deleted too many vias. If you ever tried to talk to an Italian with your hands in your pockets, you'll know what I'm talking about. He won't understand you. You're going to have to throw a little via on the line with your palm up or palm down or pound the table a bit. You know, that sort of thing is an additional communication. Well, it can become so much the communication that this doingness becomes actually part of the communication system, to where they read off of each other's motions and expressions what they are trying to say. And I know some barbaric languages which are incomprehensible unless you're confronting the person. If you are not watching the person, their actual vocabulary is meaningless because it's homonymic. One word is liable to mean 1,000 different things, and it's just what is present in the environment. That is what you are referring to. Their words for yes and no are so complicated that yes and no themselves relegate themselves to an expression, and they no longer say yes or no. They raise their eyebrows or they dip their eyebrows slightly, and that's yes or no, you see. Now, that's an awful lot of via going into communication. That's putting visual into communication as well as sonic. Well, your preclear falls out of communication on all perception ranges simultaneously. As he goes down the line. But these are merely increasing stupidities. Now, an auditor who is tremendously intolerant of stupidity doesn't get very far with preclear. If his intolerance of stupidity is great, his critical level toward the preclear is practically going to swamp the session. We know the preclear is stupid. This we assume amongst ourselves. His stupidity simply consists of this and nothing but this. The number of vias he has on the subject of communication and thinkingness. And if he puts too many vias on the line, he's stupid. See that? Stupidity becomes at length a mass. And that mass consists of a number of vias. And the vias go to indefinite locations at indefinite distances, one to another, but in close proximity, usually, so that they start short-circuiting. Now, do you see how your via could go from point A to point B to point C? That's easy. Now, from point A to point B to point C to point D, tough. Now, A to B to C to D to E to F to G to H to I to J to K to L, M, N, O, P, point R. In an area of a millimeter. And we would have what? We would have point H being point B, wouldn't we? And we would have point G being point R. And it'd be a mess, wouldn't it? Well, it's fascinating to behold that this graphic representation is not merely a graphic representation. It's entirely factual. 100% factual. That is exactly what a brain looks like when you start to tear one apart as a thetan. You know, a thetan can tear a brain apart. And as it comes apart, it starts talking in odd, peculiar ways. Old postulates, there's nothing live about it, it's just old postulates are packed in. Its communication lines are so complicated that it is identifying. So that H equals G. Now, we get in language itself this oldest of old example in Dianetics. He rode a horse, R-O-W-E-D. Now, a person who was very batty would see nothing wrong with the statement, he rode a horse. And he would not balk at somebody getting on a horse with a pair of oars and paddling away, you see. The identification between rode and rode is an acceptable thing to this person. Thus, we get languages becoming more and more homonymic. More and more things are all attached to the same word. Do you see this? And by that alone, we do recognize stupidity. Quite interesting, but it is stupidity. Stupidity is a mass. And as we start to handle masses in a thinkingness way, you can mock up a mass and have it. And it doesn't have to have any of these vias in it. We can mock it up and make it disappear. We can mock it up and make it persist. We can mock it up and make it change. And it doesn't have to have any of these. But that is just straightly a mocked up mass, you see. You just bang, you mocked it up and there it is. Now, it's quite something else. Quite something else. These masses that are occasioned by stupidity. Because when you start to take them apart, they start talking. And this is what we call a circuit in action. This guy lived longer and longer. Oh, let's say he was a member of the Continental Army or something of the sort in the reign of Lord Wumpfbottom. And he was under that command. And the general orders of the day began with Cocoa will be served to all troops 2 hours after the opening of the battle, because I have just made a contract with the cocoa manufacturers of the area or something, you know, and standard army orders. And he has lived in this kind of an atmosphere, and the way to play that game was to be good and dumb. Brightfellow didn't survive in that atmosphere at all. This is a great shock to some young genius who gets in the army in some fashion or another, that nobody wants him to think. Nobody wants any more ability than to either look very nice in a ballroom or look very nice on a horse or on parade. That'd be the total ability demanded. Or to write with a nice round hand at a desk and copy the exact dispatches. Or, similarly, walk up and down carrying a musket just so. They don't want to know anything else that he does, you see. So he's condensed into the stupidity. Therefore, he must stop other impulses and communications as they come, you see, because they'll move him out of his game. And so he piles up an actual mass, which is stupidity. Now, Preakley will get one of these masses around, you know, that he himself has piled up, or some thetan back on the genetic line. You see, the thetan in this generation is the inheritor of all of the masses piled up on the genetic line. The old thetans aren't there, but their stupidity masses and everything else are. Their screams, their facsimiles, their mock-ups, and so forth are all there. And we start running a Preakley down in Hattings. We're going to get real practical. You just thought I was just giving you some lighthearted chatter here, but we're going to get real practical. We start running this Preakley down in Hattings. And now what happens? His masses start talking, because they start to come apart, because the vacuums of where the fellow is actually pulls in masses, and these masses are capable of a performance. In fact, some of these circuits actually act like live beings. Of course they act like live beings, because they did at one time act as the monitoring or controlling influence of the game which a live being was playing, and he made it and he left it, and there it is. And so you run him down in Havingness, and the circuits start talking. And he starts saying goofy things. He starts getting goofy thoughts. These things hand out pre-made cognitions. All kinds of little oddities occur. Down goes his Havingness, on go the circuits. Now you see the exact mechanism? All right. Your Preakley also gets more and more stupid. And although he's apparently getting brighter because he's making all of these strange remarks, the truth of the matter is you might be running him down and having this. And one time when he was an astronomer for the Chaldean Royal Observatory or something of the sort, why, he had a lot of bright things to think about, you know, in a sort of a stupid way, such as eclipses demonstrate conclusively that the rain has only 2.9 years to go, and other exact calculations. And this thing turns on. It's not very rational, but he does sound like he's doing a lot of thinking, you see. Now, one of these days when you're sitting on Olympus or running a game somewhere or doing something someplace else, the mock-up which you're packing around right now and which has gone on further down the track is liable to do this astonishing thing. Some other thetan picks it up, and it starts talking Scientology at him. Get the idea? Well, that's a total possibility. Now, the rationale and thinkingnesses of past lives, therefore, turn on in people rather easily. This individual says he's going to paint. He's going to paint. That's what he's going to do. As a matter of fact, he as a thetan has considerable talent as a painter. So he starts to put this body through its paces, and he paints very, very well as long as he is actually making and creating paintings, you see. And then one day something keeps him from creating paintings. And somebody teaches him, you see, that really, really to go about this well, a society circuit, you might say, somebody out in the society teaches him that in order to do this thing well, you must have a certain spiritual attitude, you know? In other words, they fixed his mood of game or something. You know? So he would only paint when he felt this way. Or he had a very successful thing that was exhibited everywhere, and he remembered very, very well that he felt very sad when he painted the thing. So the best thing to do is to feel sad, you see. And he'll stop painting as many canvases. Creates a scarcity, doesn't he? Somewhere in his bank, there may be a life as a painter. Not that he has lived, but that somebody has lived. Now, he'll say he's lived it. That misowns it and makes it solid. All right, or he lived it and packed in there with a thetan, and he says somebody else lived it, and that also makes it solid. Well, this thing, he doesn't have to have any opinions on the thing at all. He starts to run short on paintings. And the next thing you know, he is getting advice on the subject of paintings. And he's liable to be listening to guardian angels on what he ought to paint. He's liable to have hunches. He's liable to have certain predictive inaccuracies with regard to what will happen to him if he paints certain things. He begins to build a superstition on the subject of painting. This is out of some life he has led, Lord knows where, on the track. You got the idea? So you start making mock-ups, and this painting this, from way back when, as a stupidity mash, you see, starts to unravel, and he gets all sorts of advice on the subject of how to make this mock-up. Well, this is fascinating. How should he make a mock-up? Well, he simply should postulate that it is there, and it appears. That's all. That's how he makes a mock-up. He also could postulate that it's there and that he can see it. That also helps. But he doesn't do this. He just gets all this advice and this automatic activity that he's supposed to engage upon one way or the other, you see? And he's getting advice off the track. Now, a thetan has made up machines by postulate and has hidden them so that sometime when he hasn't got enough game, they will do something or they'll rescue him or so forth. He's quite facetious in making these things up. But they are rather standard, these machines. The body has stupidity masses, which go into action on dissolution. A thetan has machinery, which goes into action on a loss of game. And either way, we get then two types of circuits or activities occurring to an individual, which you, as an auditor, could consider inexplicable, because they are so variable. And as you stand outside the preclear, processing him, you think you discover all sorts of oddities that you never suspected before, and neither has the preclear ever suspected these before, if you continue to as-is mass in the preclear with lots of thinkingnesses. You see this? He thinks it a mass, it starts to dissolve. It then feeds him data. Now, this cycle is not bringing the preclear to any new cognition. This is just monkeying around. You run down his havingness, you turn on one, his machines, and two, these stupidities. And both of them turn on when havingness runs down. If he doesn't eat breakfast and you start to process him, he's apt to have one of these things turn on. This fascinating? It's a substitute way of making masses. Balled up communications, balled up postulates and thoughts, becoming jammed in a small space. You do have a mass if this occurs, and as a result, this mass will start talking. So he'll talk to you about having thetans in his body, about black thetans appearing in his environment, about guardian angels coming and advising him, about visions which have just occurred sent by Lord knows who. You see that? And he'll talk to you about these things. You will also get him outside, and he'll think of Paris, and he'll be in Paris, and he'll think of New York, and he'll be in New York. And he'll think of London, and he'll be in London. You're giving him a grand tour, but he just thinks of something, and he's there. Well, that's fascinating. You say, moon, and he's on the moon. But he didn't put himself on the moon. You did. How? You activated a machine which is a sending machine. There can be machines on anything. But sudden, automatic, or inexplicable behavior on the part of a thetan is something that you, as an auditor, could examine and fool with and try to do something with hour after hour, intensive after intensive. But you only could do this if you failed to remedy your preclear's havingness. The machine only turns on in the absence of one of the elements of the game, and the most common absence that turns it on is havingness. You can count on that. You got it? It would be too limiting a statement to say only havingness will turn on a machine, because immediately, or a stupidity mass, you see, that we call circuits, demon circuits, so on, for the good reason that the machine that the Thetan mocks up turns on an absence of game. He's making games with himself, you see. And the stupidity mass turns on for lack of havingness. So actually, the machine also turns on for lack of mass, but that's only one part of the game, you see. Havingness is just one part of the game. Thetan's machinery could be rigged, because he's quite agile this way, also to turn on with a lack of problems or lack of freedom. See? Some of it's preventive. He's got a machine very often that says, when the body kicks off, this machine will exteriorize me. He's worried he's free, he'll stick in the body or something of the sort. See? You're liable to have a machine like that turn on, and when a machine like that turns on, he does a bunk. You say, be 3 feet behind your head, and he's immediately going on by Arcturus, you see? He's left. Body slumps, everything else. He really didn't do this. You turned on this machine, which compulsively exteriorized him if the body died. Only you said, be 3 feet back of your head, which was the same to him as body dead, therefore he does a bunk. You got that? All right, so you could activate almost any of this machinery, but you would only activate it in the absence of one of the principal elements of the game, of which there are three. So if machines start to turn on, and I'm saying machines now, start to turn on, he gets automatic mock-ups. Something like this, some darn fool thing. I mean, there's no reason for me to stand here and categorize machines. You could put these on a pattern, you could analyze them, you say they fall into three classes we already have. We've given lots of data on a machine, but the funny part of it is all you got to do is make a postulate, hide the postulate, and you got a machine as a Thetan, you see. There's many kinds of machines, really. The guy could make postulates to make machines, so there's no sense in drawing up a big or small catalog of them. What it is a peculiar activity which occurs to a Thetan, which is not under his control. And you just say, that's machine. Machines turn on under the depression or exaggeration of one of the three elements, or all three, or two of the three, by the auditor. The elements are havingness, problems, and freedom. When a machine turns on, it is simply a symbol and sign and warning that only one thing has happened. You have gotten an unbalanced processing session behind you. See, it's unbalanced. So you better figure out in an awful hurry what you've been omitting. Just as simple as that. You say, oh, yes, I haven't let him originate any communication. No, you people wouldn't do that, but some book auditor might. So that's how simple you could get in an analysis of what is wrong. This machinery turns on. He all of a sudden is getting a parade of mock-ups. They're just faces that go by, and each one as it goes by nods to him. And it just keeps going like this. This will worry him frantic, by the way. He'll be worried silly about something like this. And it's nothing but a machine that's turned on, you see. And by they go, and you as an auditor, if you tried, you see, you could make him do this, you could make him mock these up, and thereby duplicating the action of the machine, you see, you could still it. But why doesn't taking over the automaticity always work, particularly on low-tone preclears? Why doesn't it work? Because it is a substitute game. Got it? So you just better rehabilitate according to processing definition of. Processing is, of course, returning him to freedom to play a game, you see. Restoring enough freedom so that he can play a game. Restoring his ability to play a game. That's the way it is. Follow me? So you've dropped one of these elements. You've repressed him. Rod told me the other day, I don't know, he says, this having this processing that you're doing, he said, it just doesn't work. It's all you're doing, you know, you're processing. It wasn't his. If he wanted to have it and own it, he'd certainly misown it. It'd be my statement that you made, you see, and he'd know the statement. A lot of people tell me very often in H BA/CA classes, some students' lab will say to me, you know, I'm having the awfulest time memorizing your axioms. Get out, it is a dead giveaway. That's right, they're my axioms. As he has seen them, they're on the page, you see. And he doesn't do otherwise than assign the instant, present time, creation of the axiom, you see. So, of course, it as-is just as fast as he reads it. And he keeps doing this. Now, if he just, and people, very often these chaps are very pleasant, you know. They say, that's certainly a beautiful job, it's wonderful, I mean, I am so impressed. They very often say, I just admire them so much, I just disappear. But the truth of the matter is, they've got a misownership on the things, and so they can't have them. The real truth about the axioms are, of course, that these are not a creation, except in their order, organization, and wording. They are sorted out because they are the common denominators which life forms and thetans have in this universe. And as such, they are then a list of orderly considerations which themselves form a very wide agreement. A person is liable to strike his own forgetters in studying these. He reads an axiom, he quote it, reads it, quote it, just fine. He reads it again, he quote it, reads it again. All of a sudden, he can't remember what he was reading. All he's done is trigger in, by thinkingness and readingness, a machine which actually is still contains that agreement. You got it? Only the machine also carries with it a forgetter, and he gets the benefit of the forgetter. He's chewing the machine up. He starts chewing the machine up. If an individual at that time were to remedy his havingness or invent a couple of problems of comparable magnitude or something of the sort, he'd key this machine out. The safe rule to follow and the most usual thing that happens is that havingness gets chewed up and the machine or the stupidity mass turns on. Now, with this other stupidity mass, you're pretty clear we admit as being stupid. We admit that he is being stupid. This is for sure. But if you start processing all the stupidities of all the thetans who have ever governed this body on the genetic line, you are going to have a picnic. And if you keep yapping at him for being stupid or look like he's stupid, you'll key these things in. Your thought that he is terribly stupid and your criticalness in thinking it. You could think he was stupid in a very benign, sweet way, and it wouldn't do a thing to him. But using sort of back of your breath, you know, like this, you're liable to key some of these stupidity masses in, and now you've got an interesting thing. You're pre-clear sitting there going, gah. And you say, well, now think that over. And he starts hitting what we call a communication lag. Some of these old vias start to untangle. And they untangle in so many different directions and so forth, and they have so many adjuncts connected with them that he gets unconsciousness. It runs into the penalty factor, you see. All right. As we look this problem over, we find then that an unbalanced processing, and in particular a failure to adequately and smartly and smoothly remedy a preclear's havingness, which is to accept and let remain and reject masses, will turn on these stupidity masses, which then appear like demon circuits or stray thoughts, or they will key in and turn on the thetan's machinery, which, of course, irregularizes the entire behavior of the case. So if a case starts to act a bit off, starts to do something dull, look at your auditor's code first off. Don't look at other esoteric basics. You know, that auditor's code was built out of experience. The first auditor's code, 1950, was sort of when knighthood was in flower. I mean, really, that is the source of it. It was just a very civilized code. And we knew that an auditor had to act decently in order to audit properly. And that was really the source of it, chivalry. And that's fine, but as the years went along, we accumulated more and more data, and we finally have accumulated these things, and when these things are overlooked in processing, the case doesn't do well. We took the common denominators of all failed cases and watched them carefully for a very long time and got the auditor's code. We probably could add two or three things to it of one kind or another. If we added anything to it, would be must not neglect to remedy havingness of the preclear. That'd be one of them. Must not run the preclear out of problems, and must permit the preclear a certain freedom of choice in processing, even if it is guided carefully by the auditor. We'd add something like that to it, and we'd have it all very factual. So the preclear comes in. He's been running all right yesterday. He's not running all right today. Then one or two things have happened that we would harp on instantly, grab hold of, and be sure. He's been upset, which means that he's had some threatened loss of some kind or another between sessions. A threatened loss of some object or something of this character. And we would suspect something like this had happened. He obviously hasn't been physical damaged. After all, if he's brought into the session on a stretcher, you know what to expect. But sometimes they simply come in and they look all right and they sit down in the chair and you say, well, all right, now where were we yesterday? We were running so-and-so-and-so-and-so. That's fine. Now, let's see, how do you feel about starting that over again and so forth? And we do, and he doesn't run on it. But he was running on it well yesterday. Well, then there's something happened between sessions, didn't they? The smart auditor always chit-chats with the preclear to get the history of the intervening time so that he never starts in and gives the preclear a lose. You see, because you've sailed into the case and you've given him a lose right off the basis. Well, covering that intervening time is very important to discuss whether anything has happened to him or not. Sometimes the preclear doesn't tell you toward the middle of the session that something did happen. I mean, he himself didn't remember it. And the other things that we would ask would be very germane to the auditor's code. Do you eat breakfast? Now, here is a great oddity. The basal metabolism of a preclear can drop to such a degree by an omission of food. His body is used to eating, remember? One of his activities. It can drop to such a degree that he would probably be ordered hospitalized if an expert on basal metabolism were to take his basal metabolism at that moment. This is a great oddity. This preclear who's in perfectly good shape comes in, you give him a basal metabolism test. By the way, there's a way to do this with E-meters. You can give a basal metabolism test. You have him take a deep breath and let it out, and if the needle doesn't react and go over and hit the pin and come back again, his basal metabolism's low. Sometimes when an individual hasn't had breakfast, you warm him up on the meter, then you have him take a deep breath and exhale it, and the needle moves about 1/100th of an inch, you know. Oh, boy, this would be horrible. That is, he isn't burning. The burning rate of oxygen and so forth is expressed by the meter. It's a good basal metabolism meter. And you'd find out that when he hasn't had breakfast, his basal metabolism is very poor. In other words, his burning rate on energy is very poor. And he's upset. His havingness is upset. Well, now you go ahead and process him, and maybe by carelessly, you give him a couple of hours of two-way communication, and as is a whole lot more, you know. No breakfast. You know he isn't getting along well. You're trying to talk this over and find out what's wrong with him. And in talking it over, you as is some more mass. Well, about that time, one of these machines turns on. Heavily. And you'd swear to Pete your preclear's gone mad. Now, the only real danger is that if you kept this up hour after hour and session after session, and you ground him down to a fine nub, he would walk away and for the next several weeks probably present the appearance to his friends of being utterly mad. The machines would be on and so forth. But you wouldn't audit that badly. It's pretty hard to do. I mean, you'd really have to really pull some awful boo-boos. Actually, the amount of harm that you can do people by auditing is very slight. Remember, the Thetan is indestructible. You don't have to be too careful. You just know how careful you ought to be. That's the most important thing which you as an auditor should know, is how careful do I have to be? And you learn to size up the person and know how careful you have to be. It's sometimes enough with a guy whose case is very bad to simply have a forbidding look on your face and cave him in. I mean, it's just that much. And this other guy, you say, well, what in the hell's the matter with you? Here you are, half an hour late, and you're coming to a session. What's the idea? What do you think I'm here for? It's discourteous. It's all right for me to be late. I'm the auditor, but not you. Fella says, okay, I'll do better next time. Sits down, goes along happily. You get the idea. There's variability here. Well, it's the security of mind of the individual who's being audited that gives us this. All right. We look over this whole problem of problems and havingness and freedom, and we discover then that we have potentially enormous variables, terrific variability of reaction. But, oddly enough, and beautifully enough, we have certain elements which are important. And these elements are, of course, havingness, problems, freedom, the cycle of action on these three things, which consists of create, survive, and destroy. Each element has create, survive, and destroy. Each one of these elements is subdivisible into other elements, of course, but as you continued to subdivide, you would at length find there are certain important subdivisions, by the way. For instance, the mood of game is very important. Penalties. You know, if you do that 1 minute more, why, we're going to throw you out, see? That's a freedom penalty. You got the idea? I've seen the morale. By the way, the movie Mr. Roberts was quite amusing to me particularly. The bucket was the USS Algol. And the captain there, I probably wouldn't, better not use his name, and so forth. And he wrecked the morale of these people, just hands down, with a phrase which was quite interesting. He said, the gangway is open to all parts of the world. If you don't want to be here, you can beat it. You wouldn't think that or normally would flatten morale as flat as it did. But he was saying to all of these men, we don't need you. And the penalty is freedom, unlimited freedom. It made them all go into apathy, of course. See that? So you as an auditor can do some restricting. And very often you find a preacher who's short on barriers will not work if you give him unlimited power of choice or unlimited freedom while being audited. I know one case in particular that I insulted into good shape. I didn't have time to process him. He was on staff, and I simply insulted him into good condition. I put up enough barriers and apparently gave him enough problems. And by the way, my mood of game was not antagonism. I simply gave him these insults and so forth in the friendliest tone of voice you ever heard of. Well, there you are again today. I suppose you've wrecked the whole operation as usual. What boo-boos have you pulled now? Come on, I'm busy. Tell me. He'd have this feeling he understands me. This, by the way, is a wonderful guy, but it really did remedy his havingness of barriers and restrictions. That was the way we got along for a while. And he finally got pretty good at it. He eventually came up in tone where he was insulting me back. Very antagonistically. And then finally he got so he very good communication, real good shape. It's practically all the auditing the guy had over a long period of time. We were awful busy. Now, it's very true that that many a man in the field of health in practice has been successful simply by laying down a considerable number of restrictions. He says, now, you can only eat bananas, and milk is, you'll have to drink 1.5 pints of that per day at a temperature of 82 degrees. Exactly. And you must take these powders at the most inconvenient times of the day, which I can dream up. And you must come back here and have your shin kicked at great regularity, you see? And he puts down these restrictions, and he gives to the individual who is flopping all around in life a certain regimen. It has much to do with the fellow's health, but it has a lot to do with his happiness. You see that? So people will very often come back to a doctor who is very sharply restrictive and leave others completely alone. Now, you actually can get an individual to sacrifice food and that sort of thing and become healthy. It's an oddity, but you can do this. You merely are making him take over an automaticity that's going on anyhow. And it's not a bad practice at all, dieting. It has rather wonderful results. If you don't diet the fellow down to a point where you turn on his machinery, the way the holy man does in India. The holy man in India and his visions, the most wonderful thing to see ever saw. I mean, they will starve themselves until there's not enough body left to be in. And you've got all machines in total operation, you know. Well, they can tell you anything. Another thing is you can get by starvation a manifestation of being buttered all over the universe. Everybody's thoughts start recording in you. See, you just get in compulsive communication in your effort to have havingness. You just reach to every mass and every head and go in communication with everything. And boy, can you read people's minds. There is nothing like a couple of days dieting to assist you in your fortune telling if you ever go in for reading cards. It's not necessary to do that at all. It's just a mechanical way of doing it. So as we look over these various vagaries to which an individual is prone, and they are vagaries, there's nothing else, we are liable to take them very seriously. And we're liable to categorize the tremendous variety it becomes a staggering problem. I mean, let's just classify machines and then break down our basic classes of machines into all other possible classes of machines. And then let's dream up a special process which you have to memorize and know, which particularly applies to each and every one of these machines, with a different process for each one of the 8,755 classes which we have dreamed up. And we've got a nice, complicated subject. But is it workable? No, it ceases to be workable for the good idea that you haven't got the time. And because if we processed each machine, we would simply continue to as is the machine. One of the nicest cognitions I've had in recent times, completely aside from straightening out some of this, what was dropped from processing, you see, and getting that back on the road so profiles continue to rise, and this is terrific, they are rising. What an auditor can do today is tremendously predictable. But anyhow, one of the nicest cognitions I've had in recent months was, I was standing there, I was minding my own business, I was very relaxed, and somebody in the ACC was complaining as usual about his pre-clear had just done something or other, and he couldn't understand this somehow. This happens in the ACC because ACCs normally test lots of processes. And I all of a sudden realized he was talking about a machine automaticity, and that he had turned it on by running down the havingness of the pre-clear. So I subjected this to a test. It was nice cognition. I knew that was true, but I nevertheless tested it. And found out that you can turn on machines at will by reducing the havingness of a pre-clear. Also, you can turn on stupidities at will by running down the havingness of a pre-clear. Now, a comm lag is actually the upper echelon of dope-off. And it comes about as the individual starts to run out of havingness. In other words, the fellow is comm lagging because his havingness is scarce on some subject. Now, let's look at the actual operation of comm lag. We say to the fellow, well, now, you have a hard trouble there going to sleep at night. And tell me now, when is the last time you had trouble going to sleep? And he says, well, he just told you at the beginning of the session it was last night about 10 o'clock he tried to go. They told you all about it, and you're asking him the question directly, he can't answer it. You're dealing with a scarcity. At once you're dealing with a scarcity, and so he calm lags on the subject. Got this? It's just a top level of boil off. And it, of course, starts to pull apart a stupidity machine. So you get all the manifestations of via comm lines coming untangled. You get this kind of funny, stupid feeling in the pre-clear. And that's just all top echelon boil-off. That's all. A little bit lower down the line while he'd start boiling. They're really, for our purposes, classifiable in the same gradient scale. They really don't quite feel like it because he's alert to what's going on to some degree. But you've asked him about a scarce subject. And any time you want to produce a comm lag in a pre-clear, ask him about a scarce subject, and that's that. Therefore, if you're asking an individual something, that he want to straighten out, he will go through a series of Carmelites and re-conclude on the subject. But his best reconclusion is concerning its freedom, problems, and headingness. You see? And there you have somehow or other tried to, and very often successfully, short-circuited the idea of running out the headingness and running in the change of postulate. He'll come to the postulate that's interrupting him, and he'll as-is it one way or the other, and then he will be in good shape. But you've reduced, one, his havingness, two, the problem connected with it, and three, his own power of choice. You've let that stupidity mask come in there closer and start unwinding. Follow me? All right, so we get a different reaction there and a better understanding of what this fellow's comlag is. We ask the individual, do you like women? And he says, a thud. And we have a large front yard full of silence. Can't answer the question. He's trying to contemplate women. If you were to promptly say to him, hey, Joe, hey, come on, brighten up there. I know this would be kind of bad because he's pretty anitan, you see. We'd say, how would you go about wasting women? See, we'd start right in on this. On have, problem, and freedom, see? Hey, Joe, waste some women. How would you go about wasting some women? Come on. Oh, I don't know. Comlag. But not as long as if you'd left the other one float, see? This is not really an improper way to process, you know. Not very proper either. Because you don't interrupt a comlag. You'd let him answer the question. I'm just showing you what the test is. You really let him answer the question. How do you like women? He'd finally say, I don't know. I don't. Or something of this character. And we'd say, that's fine, and then do something about it. We could, of course, ask him the question repetitively several times and get it flat and get him to change his mind on it somehow or other, you see. Just for test purposes, if we said, waste some women, then create them on some gradient scale, throw them away, shoot them, do something with them, sacrifice them. You know, you could do a heck of a lot. You're looking for specific auditing commands, and I'm trying to give you a theory right this minute, see. We would remedy his havingness on the subject of women. We'd say, then, how do you like women? Oh, I guess they're all right. Get the idea. He is free to answer. He doesn't at once give us a great deal of boshwash and backflash in terms of a stupidity mask moving in on him. Because when he's comlagging, he's being stupid. He's being stupid because a mask full of untangling communication lines is coming apart. See, I'm showing you the mechanism. All right, so we solve his problems connected with women. We have upset his game with women. Tomorrow, he's not going to like us. So we'd have to follow it with this. All right, now we've remedied his havingness a little bit. We find it didn't work very well, but we did somehow remedy his havingness with women. And then we say to him, can you think of a problem of comparable magnitude to women? See, that's the crudest question we could ask him, not even well thought out. But remember, it's about a terminal. This you must know. You never ask for a problem or anything else about a condition. Oh, remember that. Stamp that down in letters of solid fire. Don't process conditions. Process terminals. Got it? A fella has a gaseous stomach. What problem could a gaseous stomach be to you? Now, invent a problem a gaseous stomach could be to you. See, oh, no. See, the proper one is, invent a problem a stomach could be to you. See, the terminal. That's not a good auditing command, even then, but you're at least dressing a terminal. It'd be, invent a problem women can be to you, see. You're not a problem bad women can be to you. Or something ephemeral like, what problem could sex be to you? See? Oh, this is kind of dull. The guy may not have any sexual terminal of any kind whatsoever, at which time you're asking him about a condition. Boy, well, this as-is thing's in an awful hurry, and it'll foul him up. A chap recently went around saying, I don't know about this problem. I'm sure Ron knows what he's talking about, but I've had this earache for some time, and I keep running this. I know this is the answer. I'll get rid of the earache. Now, what problem can this somatic be to me? Ow, ow. And it got worse and worse, and finally began to suppurate. He just ran in the ground. I tipped him off and said, now, what problem can an ear be to you? See? But preferably, invent a problem an ear can be to you. And, of course, the individual, if he ran it, snapped out of it. I don't know that particular test. I just know a boo-boo of this character can be made by somebody who's been told directly that he mustn't run a condition, then he runs what problem can the somatic be. All right, similarly, havingness. You never ask anybody, what could you have as an auditing problem? You say, look around this room and find something you could have. Get the difference. You just strip the bank down. Don't ask them these indefinite problems then that invite these circuits in and invite these conditions to occur. Use terminals somehow or another. At least have him mock up these terminals, you see, or find them in the environment. But it must be something tangible in order to continue a game. Not because havingness is good for or bad for a thetan, you see. That's not the problem. The problem is havingness is part of games. And therefore, there is some there, and when you process things, you better process terminals. Don't process conditions. The easiest thing a thetan can do is make statements and change his mind. That's the easiest thing he can do, really. But he's afraid to change his mind, because if he changes his mind, he won't have a game. Follow me? So, we have this sort of an activity going on all the time. I'd just as soon be free as long as I can have a game getting free. And a lot of your preachers simply play the game of getting free. They're being unbalanced, and so they're fixed over on freedom. You know, they've been talked to by too many revolutionaries. Maybe they've still got a stupidity bank from Robespierre or something kicking around. And they've got to be free. And they don't know what freedom is. And they wouldn't for 2 minutes be any freer than they are because they wouldn't have a game of getting free. I know Preakler tells all of his auditors the only thing he wants to do is exteriorize. Now, why can't you exteriorize me? Yappity, yappity, yappity. And he's been going on like this for ages. Yet he won't run a process which exteriorizes him. Now, what would you say was going on in that particular Preakler? Quite amusing. What's really going on is naturally his havingness keeps going down in some fashion because he's knocking out any havingness he's handled, and therefore his circuits keep coming on. He's evidently got one on exteriorization. But it's still a game. Still a game, and he'll rehabilitate that game. It's the only game he knows right now. It's the game of getting free. You know, he might feel wonderful an instant after he got free, but he wouldn't have any game, and he would go back in, and so has done this several times. Follow me? All right, so we'd have to process with this matter of women. We'd have to do something about havingness, masses, terminals, and that would, of course, include men and women. It's very silly to think that you could process women all by themselves because there are men bodies, too. And you start processing it lopsidedly, where you process something that's strictly a second dynamic type question. You posed it that way, you see. And this chap, you will start running him out of havingness, because every time he mocks up a woman, he sort of as-is-es, to some degree, the masculine counterpart that is opposing her, you see, in some fashion. And you're freeing him up on one barrier and messing him up on the other barrier. You have to treat these things in a balance, you see. Not that we have to compensate for everything and keep everything in the straight and narrow and all that sort of thing. Just because you process a person on one side of a question for 5 hours, you don't process them on the other side for 5 hours. But you keep alert, and you know the associative things to the terminals you run. Don't walk off and neglect them. The case gets all right, that's fine, you got away with it, that's well, you didn't have to touch anything else, but all of a sudden you're not getting away with it. Well, you better process whatever is associated with that terminal. For instance, to process only baseball bats is going to leave him with some baseballs. You get the idea. To process only St. Paul's may, but not necessarily, will leave him with a lot of pavement. The streets, and the rest of London. You're liable to stick him. In other words, with the rest of the material. Get the idea? You can carry this too far, because every location you ever touch, then you'd have to blow up to the size of Earth, wouldn't you? So this will be carried too far, but always remember that if you ask him to mock something up, he's liable to mock up its associative materials, too. And then you never as-is these or handle them, and the next thing you know, he walks out of session, and boy, is he stacked up. He's got more baggage he's carrying along that has no bearing. You always want to ask him what's going on, what it looks like to him, because of this associative information. All right. This associative information, of course, happens because of these stupidity ridges and mock-up machines and so on. By the way, what you call normally a ridge and a stupidity mass are to some measure the same thing, with the exception that a ridge can occur by straight standing wave mock-up. That's an electronic mechanism. And by the way, don't be alarmed by things like ridges and electronic phenomena, because these are basically postulates, and if your preclear doesn't have them, and if you don't have them, that does not mean that they do not exist, but it doesn't mean they have to exist for you. You get the idea. I've had people get very upset on this particular point. All right, so the individual starts getting pressures of some sort, and you just remedied he's having this. And his pressures are harder. And you remedied his having this, and you say to yourself, well, this fellow is not behaving right. Not behaving according to the book. Yes, he is behaving according to the book. You remedied having this up to the point when he could be reassured about problems. And then you're processing hung up on the next element. And then you ran problems for a while, but by golly, you ran down his freedom somehow in doing this, and you might ask him to invent a problem a few times too many, you know, and he'd start to feel like he was really being compounded. You might then have to run a freedom process of some kind or another to keep him in balance. Ask him, for instance, just a few times, what could you reach? You see, and you've run a freedom process. Now, the basic processes are a matter of written text, not a matter of these advices which I am giving you. The fundamental questions asked to solve all of these things, I say, is a matter of written text. What I'm giving you is this rationale about the thing. In any case, you're liable to run your preacher out of game. So don't just say, run him out of havingness and that's all that can happen to him. Or run him out of problems, and that's all that could happen to him. Or run him out of freedom and get him nicely trapped, that's all that could happen to him. You understand, that is not an adequate statement. A game always has certain restrictions and freedoms, has problems, the interplay of these elements, and so forth, composes a game. But you can run a preclear out of game, that's for sure. Now, you wonder whether or not games are actual. They are simply the microcosm at which we can look and so see the macrocosm, because all of us know something about games as games. Life at large, it lies in the same category. It's a very interesting thing that the energy behavior of problems compares exactly to the energy behavior of a football and a couple of football teams and a couple of goalposts. So that we could say the individual is engaged in a game. He's trying to keep a security area from being attained, and he is trying to make another security area attainable, both opposing others and being opposed by others. The auditor's fundamental difficulty in understanding any of this, of course, is he very often mistakes his preclear for another player, and so plays a game with the preclear. The preclear is a teammate that he's trying to rehabilitate and get into action, and the wider game and the people that the auditor is confronting and so forth are the personnel of life on enough higher echelons that you really never run out of enemies. And so the point here is, however, that your preclear is running in these balances, and his case stalls when he runs out of these balances. And when you have these things nicely adjusted and are running well, your preclear goes up with higher and higher security on being able to have a game. Now, we don't care how many parts each one of these 3 points has. We don't care exactly what processes are used or anything else connected with it. There are some processes which are absolutely murderous on the subject of games, but none of them escape the rationale which I'm giving you, and I hope that it assists you. Thank you.